Democratic U.S. Senator Chris Coons recently said something on the Brett Kavanaugh case, a hearing, that I found very interesting. And it wasn't necessarily his conclusions, although he made some good points, but it was actually a phrase that came out of what he was saying that I do think, whether you're on the right or the left, in the middle, libertarian, or wherever you are, wherever your political beliefs are, whatever your religious beliefs are, I do think that there's a conversation going on that we need to better understand as a culture that is affecting both men and women. And he, you know, brought up something, you know, and I'm seeing this on both sides, by the way, and we'll talk about this in this little video of controversial conversations. Chris Coons, a Democratic senator, brought up his phone and said, over the course of this hearing, I've gotten no less than 5 messages from women saying that they too have been abused. And then he used the phrase that there is obviously a nation of pain. And I think that's true. And I think that's something we need to really discuss and think about and move forward into a better world, that there is a nation of pain. Now, here's, of course, what the focus is, and I understand the focus of this. And the focus is, right now, that there are women who have been abused, and there is a movement of women who want to make sure that there's less abuse, of course, in the future, which everyone wants, and that, you know, another issue that I think is important is what the Me Too movement has done, I hope, and what it's doing, and what it, although there are dangers we can talk about, but I think the important thing that it has done is that it is encouraging more women to come forward earlier. So, you know, Chris Coons made a statement that, you know, Christine Blasey Ford had, you know, come forward to her therapist in 2012, and then he said, you know, in very rhetorical fashion, and then in 2013 and 14, 15, she told friends, and she told more friends in 2016, and she told family members in 2017, and then she told the press in 2018, you know, and he was kind of trying to make it sound like, oh, she was telling a lot of people. But to me, the real issue is, why didn't she say this at 15? And this is the question, this I think is the most important thing that I hope our culture gets out of this, is that we encourage, you know, the situation that Christine Blasey Ford went through is not something that a woman should go through without telling somebody, without making it clear, and that there is people who listen, right? And I think that is, if we get anything out of this, despite what difficulties we may have as a culture in the present time, that is critical. That, I think, is important, that we get out of it encouraging women to come forward earlier. You know, because 2012 is still 30 years later. That's still too long. Like, 30 years, that doesn't, you know, it's not to say that this did not happen to her. I don't know if it happened to her. People are saying, oh, it did, and here's the evidence, it didn't, you know, or who knows, maybe she did, you know, and, but the issue is that either way, whether she thought it happened at the time, whether she thought she was right, she should have felt comfortable in the 70s? Or I think it was the early 80s, perhaps. You know, late 70s, early 80s, I think. I don't remember I think she was saying like something like 82 or early 80s and then mid 80s. And you know, I heard people on the conservative right were really jumping on this fact. And, you know, it's 30 years. And that's what they were accusing her of, is waiting too long. And that's true. She did wait too long. But she's coming forward now. And the important thing that I think the lesson, the moral that we can get out of that is that, you know, women should be encouraged and listened to, not, you know, get, if some woman is at a party and then she says something happened to her and she's telling a guy friend or a girlfriend or a mom or a brother or a, you know, whoever she has in her life, you know, you have to have someone in your life to have that conversation with, or the authorities, the police, the sheriff, or whoever, you know, whatever you have going on in your town, that those people will at least listen and investigate and kind of learn a little bit what's going on and not immediately say, oh, well, how are you dressed, right? Oh, well, what are you asking for? And that's not, I think, a healthy way of addressing that situation. If somebody has a claim to an assault, of, you know, something illegal activity, it needs to be taken seriously. And that's something that's, you know, important. But this issue, you know, the phrase that he used Chris Coons, the Democratic senator, was a nation of pain. Now, right currently now, the focus is on women, and it should be. I understand, you know, every time I hear a woman who is, you know, who's a friend of mine who says that she in her youth was abused or something bad happened to her, that's sad to me. That's a terrible thing, and that's not something I want to happen to anybody, you know, let alone a female, but, you know, nobody really. But there is an undercurrent of pain, and so there's a lot of finger-wagging going on. Some people on the left are blaming the people on the right. Feminists are blaming certain people. There are academic feminists who are, in fact, claiming, and they're, you know, blaming the patriarchy. And, that the, you know, and for instance, the Democratic leader, or Senator Chris Coons, said that, there, you know, this idea of boys will be boys as a cultural part of our cultural milieu should not be accepted anymore. And that's true. There shouldn't be this idea that, oh, well, you know, it's just boys being boys. Just let them get away with, you know, assault and rape. And that's ridiculous. That should not be a cultural acceptance. So, you know, he's right in that regard. And I agree with that. So what we need to figure out, though, in my view, is what is causing this? I often hear, you know, there's, you know, someone on the right, Ben Shapiro, was blaming the Democratic leaders for holding on to this information for too long. I think they did. I think Christine Blasey Ford didn't say it early enough. She should have said it years ago. And the relevance to the hearing of Judge Brett Kavanaugh, I don't know. Like, it's, how do you, this is a question now, how do you address a 36-year-old claim on something? And that's that one that is arbitrary. Whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. There's no evidence for it yet. There's only supposition based, you know, in a court of law, in an objective court of law, this would not stand up for a minute. And there's a reason for that. That doesn't mean it's not true. It doesn't mean it shouldn't have any bearing on Brett Kavanaugh's appointment to the Supreme Court. But it does say something about the fact that she should not have waited that long. So the question then is, okay, in my view, is we want more women to come forward. Women are not encouraged to this day, probably. Although I think it's, you know, starting to change. I think the Me Too movement, I think the culture of social media, which we always denigrate for these types of things, actually adds a lot to this, is that we can kind of come forward, but, you know, and say something in a more comfortable setting to us. But we have to be careful, because at the same time, you know, I hear feminists or women who are inclined to call themselves feminists or whatever on the who are saying that you should always believe a woman, which to me is the most terrible thought you could ever have. How could you, like, are you telling me that no woman in the history of the world has ever lied? Like, that's always true and it's always bad, and women are not you know, women we're supposed to treat women equally, but at this case, we're not going to treat them equally, because you don't just always believe men. So now we're treating women separately. And so that cannot be the answer for a better future. Right? Even if there were injustices in the past, which there were, we need to make sure that the future is better than the past. If the future is just a repeating of the past, and we're just flipping who gets to be in control, well, then we're just going to have fights and continuing wars, and it's not going to be fun. We're gonna battle it out. And that's not something we should want. We should want to have a better society. So the question is, in what can we do, or, you know, one of the first questions is, one, what is causing women to not come forward? And I want to bring something forward that nobody talks about for the same reason. And it's not something we're supposed to talk about. It's not cool to talk about. And when men have talked about this, is from men, when men have talked about this, women have, you know, talked about white tears, which again is, you know, so now we're going to shame men into not talking about times when they were abused. And, you know, how are you supposed to rate this? You know, was Christine Blasey Ford, who was thrown on a bed, you know, her top torn off, his hand over her mouth, is that worse than a kid who gets punched in the face over and over and has his nose broken, his glasses broken, teeth chattered? Is that worse? Or is, you know, a boy that this happens to in a street fight who gets beat up or bullied to a physical sense, or, you know, is what happened to Christine Blasey Ford worse? I mean, they're both pretty bad, and I don't think it's, we should be weighing these things and saying, oh, well, you know, that's nothing, look what happened to me, or this happened. What we need to come to is what's happening, why is it happening, and why are people not speaking up about it? But this conversation that we're having, where now it's just two sides who are not listening to each other. And the point of the show is to kind of not necessarily make people listen to each other, but to come to a common language that we can go forward with. And one of the terms that I'm hearing is this nation of pain. And I like that term because, even though it's very, you know, I'm an individualist, but this is a collectivist term, but I like the fact that there are millions of individuals, both men and women, who are in pain and not expressing it. To me, that's critical. And that, I think, if we can come together and have an and talk about that and have a conversation about the question is, why are individuals, men or boys, girls, teenagers of, you know, male teenagers, female teenagers, not coming forward and telling people what's going on? Just to give you an example, when I was a kid, and I think there is a cultural thing going on I want to talk about. And when I was a kid, you know, I played baseball. I got hit in the face with a pitch right in the nose, broke my nose. And you know what I was told by people? Don't be a pussy. Don't be a pussy. And it's like, okay, so you suck it up and you move on and you go to the hospital, you get your nose fixed and you go back on the field, rub some dirt on it. You're not supposed to cry about it. You're not supposed to complain about it. Nothing, you know, you're supposed to just kind of hold it in. And we do the same thing to women. Like if something, you know, odd happens or she starts feeling nervous about a guy, we're like, ah, don't worry about it. Just boys being boys. Right. And that's the same kind of thing. And the same kind of effect it has. And this is what I want to talk about is the effect of what's causing the nation of pain. It's too simplistic to say all men are evil. Men are causing all the pain and only women feel pain. That's the logic that I'm hearing on the left. And on the right, I'm hearing the same thing they always tend to do, which is this kind of blasé covering over things and saying, oh, well, you know, they're not giving us sufficient evidence. There's not things going on. They're doing this only as a tactic, which is, there's probably truth to both sides. And that's what makes these conversations difficult, which is why we need to think of a third alternative and try to find a better language. So, you know, for me personally, and when I was, you know, I grew up and became a pretty big dude, so people stopped messing with me around 16. But before that, 16, 17, people really stopped messing with me for the most part, although I did get in a couple fights after that. But for the most part, before that, before I really started growing, you know, I'm now a 6 foot 245 guy, and people just don't pick on me, and they haven't since I was like 16, very, very rarely. But before that, I was definitely a little bit more average, and I got picked on a lot, or about as much as average, I would imagine. And I did some picking on. I think a lot of people, it was a pretty common thing. So for instance, you know, I was just thinking back to it, I've been punched, like just straight up sucker punched in the face as like a 12-year-old. You know, just like knocked in the face and knocked down. I've been put in chokeholds. I've been thrown downstairs. I've been kicked, pushed, spit on, ridiculed, everything. And you know, the question is like, you don't tell people because then you're a tattletale. Right? You fight back. That's the advice we give to men, is you fight back. And I did. I learned to fight back and, you know, stick up for myself, and it stopped. Or at least it slowed down. But then the flip side of that is then I was kind of encouraged to be a bit of a bully myself. I don't think I was a terrible bully. I was not a physically violent bully, but some of it came out. And that's not necessarily the best advice to give people, to give kids. You should learn how to defend yourself, but you have to be concomitantly, you have to have some kind of anchoring advice that makes it so that you become a better person rather than just I'm now able to punch people in the face so people don't punch me in the face, but now I'm the one punching other people in the face, which is how I got punched in the face. It's not good. You don't want that kind of cycle of violence, and that's ridiculous. Again, I want to make sure I'm stressing that this does not mean you do not teach boys or girls how to defend themselves, because we're never going to live in a utopia. So that's always a relevant issue. So, but the question is, going back to this question, Nation of Pain, why did I not talk to, about it? Why did I only think that I had to suck it up, to rub some dirt on it, to not cry, to not, you know, be scared about things? And, you know, and the same thing with young girls. Why are girls taught to you know, buck up, to not tell people what they're doing, you know, or to not tell people what's going on in their lives, to kind of keep it hidden? What kind of things are they keeping hidden? You know, why do we keep things hidden from our parents when we're kids? Well, we don't think they'll understand. We'll think it's too awkward. Well, why is it awkward? Why would it be awkward if a 15-year-old girl, you know, wants to, for instance, have sex with a boy, but she can't talk to her parents about it? Which then, you know, brings this cycle of have not talking about sex with their parents, which then, you know, brings it so that it's a secret thing. And now you have this kid, this 14, 15-year-old girl, who likes a boy, wants to do stuff with him, but she has no advice or, you know, experience or guidance on how to do it because she's afraid to talk about it. And she's afraid to talk about it because there's a shame against sex. Now, this to me is one of the, you know, when we talk about a nation of pain for women in particular, but I think for men and women, one cause I'm trying to bring out here, I'm trying to pull out a little bit, you know, there's pain among men and women. For women, a lot of the pain seems to be, and I think this is true of men too, but particularly women, because women tend to be the selectors in sexual encounters. They tend to be the ones who choose. And so they have to have a lot of burden of thinking about this, and yet they're given no guidance on how to do that. And why? Because, well, you can't talk to your parents about sex. Why not? That's ridiculous. But the reason you can't is because your parents are prudish. I think, you know, we're definitely a nation of prudes. Part of this is our Puritan background, our Christian background. And people can't talk about sex with their parents because parents will say, you just don't have sex till you're 18. Well, that's horrible advice. What if a 16-year-old wants to have sex? Why is this a bad thing? Now, I'm not saying you should give the advice of having sex when that's 15, 16. I know that's what people are going to take out of this. My point is simply that the conversation needs to feel comfortable, and you need to not teach these blanket statements to kids of, you know, don't have sex, wait till you're married, no, you know, whatever. You need to instead instill in them the ability to think about this and make their own decisions. By the time you're 15, 16, even though we treat these kids as children, as infants, they are able to have sex. So that's something that, and they're now, you know, desiring of it in an increasing amount. And so to give them an advice to fight this until marriage is just a recipe for an explosion. And I mean that in a, you know, every way that you think I mean it. So in this nation of pain, what I'm saying is the cause of it is not a patriarchy. It's not men. It's not even a boys' club. It's, you know, like it's moms. Like moms are doing this to girls too. Moms are doing this to little boys. You know, dads are doing this to little boys. You know, you don't talk about sex, or you just don't have sex. It's just not at all. And that's the advice that we give. Well, then that's bad advice. That's not good. And then the movies we watch, I mean, this is a really, I've said this over and over again. I'm going to say it again, over and over again. If you don't understand this, then you're just not paying attention. It is the most bizarre, like if this feels to you weird or like, oh, that's the way it should be, then you're not understanding how programmed you already are. It is way more acceptable to allow a young 12-year-old boy or girl, 11-year-old, 10-year-old boy or girl, to watch a violent movie where people's heads get ripped off, they get shot, they get, you know, people are dying. Like, death is a big deal, but yet it's treated in a blasé way. You know, people can watch these violent movies and television, and that's okay. But if, you know, we see a pussy or a breast or an ass or a penis, you know, where people freak out. And if you even felt, you know, I use those terms on purpose, if you kind of felt a little twinge when I said, you know, pussy or vagina or cock or penis, then, you know, this is something that we were supposed to have dealt with decades ago during the sexual revolution. Why are you still feeling uncomfortable about that? That's ridiculous. And why should a 13-year-old boy feel uncomfortable about that. That's a part of growing up, that at that point you should start to, you know, the same thing with the 13-year-old girl, they should start to understand these things. So again, I want to bring back the Nation of Pain. So one cause of the Nation of Pain isn't a patriarchy or any specific group. It's the whole milieu. It's the whole culture. It's the way that our TV, you know, we've had censors. So if you look at the Brett Kavanaugh era when this, you know, supposedly happened, and I will not say it did or did not happen without any evidence. I need hard evidence, by the way, but that's a separate issue. But this supposed incident happened in the early 80s when there were censors. When, you know, think about, what was it, 2005 or 6 when, what's her name? I was blanking on her name, when Jackson's tit popped out, right? Justin Timberlake pulled Janet Jackson's tit out, whether it was on personal, and the nation flipped their shit. What? It's a tit, man. Are you kidding me? What? Who cares if a 4-year-old sees it? It's a boob. It's not a big deal. Like, this is so ludicrous. Now, I can understand, you know, to some degree, if everyone's watching a football game and they start humping, literally having sex on stage, well, that may be, you know, going too far, but maybe not. I don't know. Like, it's a weird thing, though, that we feel freaked out about a boob, for sure. And so my argument is that it's actually an overarching culture of men and women. So I want you to focus on that. It's moms, that a young girl cannot talk to her mom about how she wants to have sex with a young boy. And the girls that I've met who've had the best relationship to sex, and they've enjoyed sex, they've felt comfortable with sex, they were able to talk at like 13, 14-year-olds. And a lot of them had boys over at 15. 16 for the night. Now, they didn't necessarily have sex, but they kind of, you know, messed around or something, and that this was like not that big a deal, right? And you know, parents would tell them, okay, so you understand you need to be safe, so you know, if you are going to choose it, be smart about it, think of, and they taught them how to think about this and say, look, if you have a kid at 15, you're going to have that kid till you're in your 30s, and you're not going to be able to go to school the way you want to. You're not going to be able to have the job that you want to have. You're not going to be able to marry the person you have necessarily. Like, and then they tell, you know, and teach them about things, but not just the negatives. Also, like, oh, well, there's also positives. It's a way to express your love. It's enjoyable. It's pleasurable. And that it's, you cannot feel a better pleasure. The point I'm trying to make is that currently we have that milieu, that cultural, you know, vibe in television, in movies, in the books that we read, and in the advice that our parents and teachers give us, which is basically, there's a subject we talk about, and then there's this taboo subject that we don't talk about, which is sex. And that leads to a nation of pain, for women particularly, but for men as well. There's other things going on too, the type of advice that we give to men. So when, or boys, you know, like I was talking about, is you rub it, you know, don't cry, don't tattletale, don't be a pussy, don't be a fag, right? Like, oh wow, you got punched in the face, get over, punch him back, kick his ass, right? And so what I'm trying to argue is that these two cultural ideas of, you know, women, we can't talk about sex, and for boys, we have to be emotionally stoic. And that's what strength means. These are the causes of the Nation of Pain, not Brett Kavanaugh, not these boys that are, they're the product. So that's the product that's going on, is that we're having a Nation of Pain, we're having a boys club, we're having a boys will be boys mentality, which is a product of this culture. Now, this culture of telling boys this and telling girls to basically hold it inside. I mean, that's what girls have to do. Girls have to make a decision. I mean, you know, try to put yourself in the position of a 16, 15-year-old girl who has a boy that she really likes, she feels good with. He probably likes her. He's, you know, a boy, and he wants to mess around. And she wants to, too, because she likes him. And, you know, but she feels really guilty and horrible about it. And so she, you know, the question is, why would she feel horrible about, you know, playing and having fun with someone that she cares about? Well, she's picking this up at home. So this causes her to perhaps resist when she wouldn't normally. right, when she would want to do it. So I'm trying to say that this type of discouragement is a problem, you know, and she's sitting there under a blanket and he's, you know, they're kind of watching movies. And these are situations I know of before. And, you know, he kind of guilts her into it. Well, so I want to stop there for a second in that story. I bet a lot of you that sounds somewhat familiar from the 15, 16, 17 year old era. Why is it guilt? Why can't they just talk about it and then they do it at 15? And so again, I'm trying to make clear that there's a culture that's anti-sex and there's also a culture that's anti-emotion. And that if we can start breaking this apart and start teaching kids instead and teaching ourselves to enjoy, and but to understand life and sex and the, you know, what can happen, that this is something that can definitely eliminate or, you know, parse away the nation of pain, because part of the pain is the repression. So that's the argument that I'm trying to make right now, is that the pain is actually caused by a desire to repress. The young girl represses her desire to have sex with a boy that she likes. And then maybe that ruins the relationship, you know, and I want you, I just said that. And I want you to think about this for a second. When you hear that, do you think, well, sex shouldn't be the only thing? Well, you know, or he should just wait for it. And it's true. There's some truth to that. But the question I'm trying to bring up is, my point is, she wants to do this. This is not, but she feels guilty. And what is the cause of that guilt? So she's now pressing down her desire to do something with a 15, 16-year-old boy that she wants to as a 15, 16-year-old girl. And that's what's leading her to now feel guilty. And then, you know, the boy doesn't get what he wants. The girl doesn't get what she wants. They go their separate ways. Now, I bet a lot of this is making you feel uncomfortable. And that, I hope it is, because that's the point. I want you to feel uncomfortable. That you feel uncomfortable is my point. Okay, you got that? Okay, so now the issue of the boys getting told something, I want to try to wrap this up and bring them together. So we have this repressing of girls' desires that they can do what they want to do, which is if they want to sleep with a boy that they like, that they should feel comfortable and do it if they want to, as long as they understand what's going on and they're you know, they're smart about it and they take control of their lives and they're taught to take control of their lives. Now, what does that have to do with boys repressing their desires? Well, what I'm saying is there's actually an attack on both of that, and it's all kind of together as a culture. It's not a concerted attack by the Brett Kavanaughs or whoever. And, you know, that's too simplistic. It's everywhere in our culture. You know, it's moms and dads. It's normal church-going people that, you know, this is a very Christian country. And I think that's not irrelevant here. I think that's a very big part of it, is that we're taught, you know, when I was listening to Ben Shapiro, the talk show host, talk about this, he said on numerous occasions, you know, how he was so proud of how he waited till he married his wife to have sex. And I thought that was just the most bizarre behavior. Like, okay, look, if you want to do what you want to do, that's fine. I do not understand how you can even enjoy life and have sex with one woman in your life. Like, that's just ludicrous to me. Like, it's like eating pizza once and that's all you're gonna have for the rest of your life. Like, I could see sticking with pizza once you find something and then learning how to put different toppings on it so that you can enjoy it as you, but he, you know, you have no basis to even to comprehend that kind of thing. And to me, that's a tragedy. I feel really bad for Ben Shapiro that he's only gotten laid with one woman. Now, again, I'm very pro monogamy, but you do need to have some samplings in your early years to kind of understand why that this one is the best. I don't see how that's even possible to do otherwise. But anyway, but that kind of view was what he was trying to push, was that you should, you know, oh, well, he's the, you know, he was trying to, I'm so proud of being that way. And that's fine. He could be proud of that. But I think there, whether people are proud or not, the advice we give is still that. And the larger question I'm bringing up is, why are we repressing that in sex? And why are we repressing pain in men and boys? And so now we have women who have a very mixed, clashed, contradictory relationship to sex. And we have boys that have a mixed, a clash, a repressed approach and connection to pain, to sadness, to the difficulties that they have. And so I think those are two effects that are caused by the broader culture. So how do we fix something like that? Now, that's a broader conversation. I don't know, I do have some answers for that. I think it has to happen in art. I think, there's a lot we have to do in education. I think there's a lot we can do in, movies and in books that we read and write, that we aren't afraid to show a movie and to encourage a movie that has sex. And I think that we're seeing things like Game of Thrones is a good move actually in that direction, that it treats, although it, it's a very large discussion that I'm not going to get into of, are they always treating sex great? And, I don't think that's necessarily the case, but they do. Sometimes they treat it as this beautiful, passionate thing. Sometimes they treat it as this horrible thing. And I think that makes that show very interesting because it treats it both ways, which kind of shows you the reality of life a little bit more. So there could be some value to that. So anyway, I think there is this cultural conversation going on. The question that keeps being arisen, that we keep gaining from this, we keep getting out of this, is that we're supposed to believe women, no matter what they say, which is, I think, ludicrous. And I think the wrong conversation, the conversation needs to be that we need to stop attacking men for the sake of being men. If they did something wrong, get rid of them. If not, leave them alone, right? But what we need to think of today going forward, and we need, and I'm all for, if somebody did something in the past, call them out on it if there's evidence. But today going forward, we need to start focusing on teaching our, as parents, in helping parents understand that 15, 16 year olds should not be taught that sex is a horrible, disgusting, dirty thing, or that it has to only be reserved for, for marriage. And we need to think about boys. So I want to conclude with the boys section. So there's a passage in the Iliad by Homer that I really like. I think it's very telling about our cultural differences. And this is when the greatest, strongest, best, most brutal warrior in the history of Greece, and especially during this era, Achilles, has left the camp and he has left the war. He is saying, I'm not going to fight anymore. And, the reason is that some of his stuff was taken away by the general, the leader of the army. And, remember they're fighting Troy at this time and they've invaded Troy. And Achilles says, I'm not going to fight anymore. And the Greeks start to lose the war because of this, because he's the best, brutalist, strongest, fastest, most skilled warrior in their army. And his men are as well. So the leader of the Greeks sends an ambassador, an ambassadorship, a group of men who are friends with Achilles to Achilles. And Achilles, when they find him, is singing songs, particularly epic poems, like the one that he's in. And he's there with his friend, and it's a very tender moment. Now, this, I think, is one of the ways that people get that maybe Achilles was homosexual and he was, sleeping with Patroclus. But that's another question for another time, and I think it's kind of irrelevant for this point. But the point is that Achilles is drawn as somebody who, when sad things are sad, he cries. When bad things happen to him, he understands it. He does not repress it. I think we've lived in this, post-Christian, post-Stoic world, which were combined, by the way, just as a historical fact. There was a lot of, ideas going around in ancient Roman times and the ancient Greek times after Homer, where you have Christianity coming up and you have them coming up at a similar time with the Stoics. And the Stoics were telling everyone that you need to just kind of accept what's going on, master your emotions, as in the way their advice actually played out was basically don't focus or think about your emotions if you're, that's where we get a lot of our views of Stoicism, that, you push it down, you don't think about it, your wife died, your daughter died, that's just the universe taking away, what is the universe's and not yours, that you were just borrowing your daughter. So it doesn't matter that your daughter died, you have to kind of emotionally control that, which is horrible advice. You should wail like the ancient Greeks used to wail. They had a release mechanism that stopped after this time period. And that's not good. We need to have that. So my point is that we have this, cultural repression of pleasure, and we have this cultural repression of pain. So we're living in a nation of pain, both on both sides, because we live in a tyranny against emotions. And that is a terrible thing. And that tyranny of emotions, to me, is the fundamental, or one of the fundamental causes of what's going on with all these women who are finally feeling comfortable and why they never felt comfortable before. Because that's the thing we need to get over, is we need to encourage women not to be different, in front of the law of men, which is what we're hearing, but to be encouraged to come forth when there's an actual problem, when something happens. And they need to feel comfortable to do that. And that is a good thing. And that comes not from, just trying to destroy men for the sake of destroying men or whatever, or anything of that nature. It needs to come from the cultural writers. It needs to come, if you're watching this or if you're a parent, you need to start of confronting your own guilt about sex. And you need to start understanding that when your kids come to age 15, not 25 or 18 or 21, when they're sexually able to have sex, they need to really understand what sex is. That when a boy gets hurt, he shouldn't be taught not to express pain. He shouldn't be taught to wallow in it. That's different. But he needs to understand that, you're punched in the face. Sometimes, you need to defend yourself in that moment, but then it's okay to kind of express that, hey, that guy punched somebody in the face. We need to stop that and to get rid of this kind of, idea that there's a, tattletale and you can't tell anybody and just hold it inside, boy. I mean, we just heard about this Catholic priest boondoggle, which nobody's really talking about it already. There's thousands of young boys, mostly, and some young girls, but mostly boys, who didn't tell anybody, and parents didn't, talk about it either. I mean, that to me is just another example of this kind of repression of actual emotions. I'll leave with this. Emotions do not hold up in a court of law, and they should not. And they should not hold up in your own life. Just because you feel a certain way doesn't make it true. But that does not at the same time mean the alternative is not to not talk about it. That's a false alternative. It is not an alternative between, doing whatever I feel like and that's the truth, versus I'm not going to ever talk about what I feel like and I'm just going to hold it all inside and just pretend it doesn't exist. Those are false alternatives. The third option is to understand that your emotions are a particular way of experiencing the world around you. But that doesn't mean that is the end all be all of truth. Just going back to Christine Blasey Ford, she could be remembering this wrong. Until we get, if you wait 30 years, I mean, if you're 33 years old, you have no basis of even understanding the concept that 30 years ago your memory is inadequate. And there's a reason why things like, lie detectors are not admissible in court. There's a reason for that, because it's very unreliable, and it has been unreliable. I mean, just imagine if we sent people to death row based on a person's accusation 30 years later. Would you be okay with that? Probably not, and for good reason. So the point I've been trying to make is that it's not necessarily the fault, that people who have done bad things need to be held accountable for it. However, if we're going to move forward into a better world, we need to have a better discourse and a better language. And my alternative for you is that what we need to be talking about is the cultural milieu. That's what we need to be talking about in our art, in our music, in our conversation as parents, in our conversation as teachers, and kids being taught not to have sex, and kids being taught not to, work through their own physical pain or emotional pain. How many boys have to hold in their emotional pain and not talk about it until they blow up? I mean, that's not, so we hear all this stuff, by the way, that, well, the fact that boys are not encouraged, you know, are not getting enough sex is the reason why they're doing this. I think that's ludicrous. I think it's that they're not taught and understand how to express their emotions that leads to that kind of desire for power. Because we know that rape, for instance, is not mostly about sex, from what I understand. From what I've read, it's more about power. One evidence of this is that a lot of people who rape are people who can have sex. Like, they can have the option of sex if they were to just do it correctly, by treating a woman respectfully, but they tend to not want to because they disdain women, and they, like Ted Bundy is a great example of this. Like, he was a psychopath, but, you know, he was somebody that women actually wanted to have sex with, but he's probably not a good example, but anyway. And I've kind of been rambling for a bit, so I'm going to stop here. But I want you guys to, I want to hear your part of the conversation. And I want to hear what you think about how can we go through the cultural discussion of this kind of conversation about the repression that we're teaching young kids that then become adults. And then they go on and do bad things because they're repressed, versus how can we make sure that they get the right kind of training to be less repressed and more comfortable having sex, more comfortable talking about sex, more comfortable enjoying sex. And the same thing with pain, so that boys can be better able to understand their own emotional pain and work through it and learn how to deal with other people who don't give them what they want to get, right? And which is a big part of being a man, is you don't get what you want. So anyway, that's what I wanted to talk about. I think this is an important, you know, conversation that's going on. I know a lot of people are complaining about it, but, and it definitely was a tactic. I don't see any way around that by the Democrats. And I think that unfortunately undermines the issue. However, it's here. So let's have the conversation. Don't be afraid to talk sex, religion, and politics at the table. If we don't talk about those things at the table, then we will be fighting in the streets. This is Controversial Conversations, and I'll see you next time.